know I'm seeing it so clear. I've been afraid to show you how I really feel. Admit to some of those bad mistakes I've made. And if you want it, come and get it. Crying out loud. The love that I was giving you. Never in doubt. Let go your heart. Let go your head.
Well, you might have thought that with respect to COVID-19 and coronavirus and so on, maybe the NHS was already stressed beyond all sorts of other areas. But it would seem that there's even more challenges that possibly might be afoot with respect to cyber terrorism and cyber attacks and so on. And to talk about this very sobering thought, and indeed maybe provide one or two suggestions in terms of how to cope with that, we're delighted to feature the Chief Executive Officer of Templar Executives, the wonderful Andrew Fitzmaurice. How are you, Andrew?
Thank you very much. I haven't often been described as wonderful, so my thanks.
Well, I just thought, actually, in terms of Templar Executives, I was thinking of Simon Templar the Saint, and you could be the saint of cybercrime or the saint of sort of stopping cyber attacks and so on. So just a thought there. But you probably had something else in mind when you actually had Templar in the original sort of line, and it's nothing to do with the fictitious Leslie Charteris character. Let's move on. Andrew, in terms of this, talk to us about this thing, which, I mean, we obviously most of us are aware of cyber attacks and the damage that the thing can actually do. But, you know, we've got cyber scams happening, phishing emails. It's a different form of virus, but it's still potentially very deadly.
It is, and unfortunately, it's another form of human virus because, obviously, all these scams are created and actually executed by humans. I mean, the real sadness is that we hear some wonderful stories. In fact, I've just done an interview where all the local taxi drivers were given their time free to move NHS workers around. But unfortunately, as a society, we aren't that nice. Whilst lots of people are doing lots of nice things, and we are putting all together, there is a group of society which is very much trying to see how they can exploit the current situation for their own benefit, and these are cyber criminals. And as you mentioned, all the scams, you know, that's something which they're really concentrating on.
Looking on an international point of view, and let's face it, it's one world, I see that cyber criminals have already successfully targeted the University Hospital in Brno, the Czech Republic. In the United States, the Department of Health and Human Services is investigating a significant increase in activity in its cyber infrastructure. Further ransomware attacks are being anticipated, including, as we mentioned at the start of this piece, the NHS. I mean, WannaCry, which seems so long time ago now, but actually cost £92 million. I mean, these are significant impacts at a time where, as we said, obviously services are already hyper-stretched.
Yeah, indeed. I think in terms of something like an attack like WannaCry, I mean, we have been working tirelessly with the NHS for the last 2-3 years since that, to actually the plans. But where the difficulties come in, well, obviously, it's to move their digital environment out beyond the hospital. And we talk about hotels being spun up as secondary sort of wards, and when they spin up the digital environment, that's obviously at risk, and they need to have a proper cybersecurity around that to ensure that they provide the care they need to provide without being spoofed.
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew, for a moment there, I thought you were being cyber-attacked yourself because we lost a bit of that, but the gist of it came through, so we're all good from that point of view. It's all great. Now, in terms of formats, I mean, it seems the advice remains the same, but sometimes we do forget this, that actually don't open files without necessarily checking that they're all sorted through, that, and ensuring that you check before you click on attachments or links. It's very tempting, because the one thing I've noticed is they're getting very, very sophisticated. I mean, even with the University of Lincoln, we've had supposed email from our Vice-Chancellor, which have never been sent, but have actually sort of, well, were never sent by the Vice-Chancellor, which are all ways of actually accessing data and getting into the system.
Yes, very much so. I mean, we hear a lot about artificial intelligence, but really what we're talking about here is machine learning. And over the last 12 to 18 months, cyber criminals have been able to harvest information from social media quite quickly, other information about individuals, to create what we call a very effective spear phishing attack, which seems incredible and often is personal to the individual.
And presumably with the growth of social media, I mean, more obviously at all times, but especially when, because of the health situation within Britain and the West, and, well, the globe, not just the Western world, but more and more people having to work from home and so on. Presumably, it's even more important that we're very vigilant about sort of activities that are going on there. I'm thinking about, you know, online face-to-face diagnoses with respect to the NHS, with respect to tutorials, and so on.
Yes, the use of online is absolutely excellent, and it was really heartening to hear that Microsoft have given Teams, which is a very effective form of face-to-face over the internet system, free for the NHS. I think that's very heartening. One of the real issues we do have are people working from home, because a lot of people aren't used to doing that. It's quite often quite a destabilizing environment. They're quite lonely quite often. And they are almost entirely reliant upon their IT for their interactions with people.
Yeah.
And consequently, feeling a little bit uncomfortable. And this does range from young people all the way up to senior executives who have found it quite difficult to decamp to home. You just have to bring the rules of the office into the home. Mm-hmm. And the psychology is actually thinking that you're going to work at home and then carrying out all the normal discipline you carry out around your IT and around your interactions and information flows that you would do in the office. And that's a good way to, a good starting point to stay safe.
And also, presumably, the sort of major thing is if there are any incidents or breaches that you think might have actually occurred or suspicious emails and so on, make sure that you actually report that to your security team, IT, line managers and so on, that the things are actually stopped there so that others don't fall prey to the same sort of challenges.
Yeah, speed is always of the essence. And you know, getting that communication. Often, you know, people feel embarrassed if they've made a mistake or clicked on it, but they shouldn't do. They should absolutely contact their IT line manager as soon as they possibly can to minimize any subsequent damage.
So, Andrew, where would you point people if they've been listening to this and they've just caught part of it, they've downloaded the podcast, they've had a listen to the various other bits and pieces, where would you actually suggest people should check out? Would it be Templar Executive or are there other sort of areas you'd suggest going to first?
Certainly we can help, and we've got some how-to videos and other bits and pieces for people just to check to make sure even their own antivirus is up to date. But in terms of the NHS, NHS Digital's website have put out some really, really good advice from the Data Security Centre. And, of course, the National Cyber Security Centre at this time is stepping up, and their website is full of advice on how to operate day-to-day safely in this environment where, unfortunately, the threat has certainly increased.
Yeah. I mean, is the prognosis good, Andrew? I mean, in terms of, I mean, we're here, it may be 12 weeks, it may be all sorts of things. I mean, that's just talking for Britain. But, you know, are we literally in this sea change where actually working in a socially isolated area or environment is going to be the way of the future? That actually the whole notion of cubicles that we used to have back in the day, or indeed individual offices and so on, maybe that's actually changing?
I think certainly from a point of view of flexibility, I think we will realize actually even is a social animal and probably does work better, jobs that do work better in a social environment.
Yeah.
But of course we don't know how this is going to end. So it might be, as you suggest, that we do end up being more isolated in our interactions than we were before COVID-19 hit.
Clearly what we need are photon life forms, or indeed virtual avatars that can actually have 3D holographic representation from that point of view. Then you could actually have a little halo of the saint and then over a Templar executives and that sort of thing. You can see I'm struck with that particular image, really. I thought, Templar executives, could it possibly be? But no, perhaps not. Maybe named after the Knights Templar, who of course were...
It was, yeah.
Which indirectly did, I believe, influence the character of the saint as well. So it's nice to see that.
There is a tenuous connection.
Well, sometimes you've got to find the positive and just take it out from that point of view. Andrew Fitzmaurice, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. The key thing, stay safe, and I think we can't reiterate this enough, really. Make sure you don't click on emails that you don't recognise, or certainly not attachments that are not there from that point of view. Report the thing, and I think you actually called it in your phrase, maintain the same levels of vigilance that you would have in an office environment, in the domestic environment, if you're working from home as well.
Absolutely.
turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on the fence, but it don't work.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Why?
Clearly, people's habits when it comes to travel, when it comes to journeying and so on, are also being massively affected by the current state of play in terms of, obviously, the COVID-19 scenario and so on. But it does seem as though there might be some positivity on the horizon with an online car maintenance service provider offering at least London-based customers over 65 years old help with delivery of essential items when collecting and returning their vehicles. We're talking, of course, about Fixter Online, and we're delighted to welcome the founder and chief executive officer of Fixter to the program today. That's Limberack Shay. How are you, Limberack?
Very well, Alex.
Excellent. Now, in terms of this, just talk to us for the benefit of those people who might have said Fixter. What is it? What sort of things do they actually offer in terms of drivers in the United Kingdom?
Well, it's very simple. I think we are the UK's first end-to-end online car maintenance service, which means you can go to fixter.co.uk, and from there you can book your MOT, your car repairs, your car service, and we'll come and pick up your car at home or at work and bring it to one of our independent garages in our network.
Now, it sounds, Limberick, as though it's, you know, one of those ideas which you thought, why didn't people think about it before? So what was it that actually drew your good self to actually develop this system when, you know, obviously, sometimes motorists are kind of being viewed as pariahs, you know, we shouldn't be driving cars, we should be driving electric cars, etc. But actually, that whole notion of getting a car fixed online seems perfectly sensible. How did you develop it?
I think the initial idea was, you think of, let's say, the taxi industry, right? Now everybody's used to call an Uber, a Lyft, a taxi using an application, and we wanted to make it as simple as that on a mobile phone for car maintenance, right? So then it's everything that is around your car, and no one had offered an experience that was really end-to-end with the drivers coming to get your car at home, right? So it's making it as simple as possible for everyone, mostly in cities, but across any age group.
Now, as we mentioned, clearly the COVID-19 scenario is impacting across society, but you've just started something off, something in the London area, which, who knows, could actually sort of be the way forward in so many ways. And just talk to us about what you've actually done, or the offer that you're putting out for customers who are over 65 years of age.
I think the way we see it, first, it's a tragedy for many people, right? It's very stressful, so we thought of ourselves, how can we help everyone, and mostly the elderly? And what we came up with after the brainstorming with our team this week was, you have all the over 65, over 70 in London that are recommended not to go out, right? So what we said is, if they book a service online with Fixter, why don't we provide them more services, right? So we asked them to leave a note, and it could be anyone in their family looking for them. And when our drivers are going to come and collect the cars, we'll try to do what to provide them more help, right? So it could be collecting grocery for them. It could be other essential supplies. And that's something that we're starting to offer as of today, because we wanted to be as reactive as possible in this really tough times.
Of course, the other thing which comes across from this is that it's a physical contact-free service. So it might be worthwhile explaining how, if people are sort of saying, I don't want strange hands sort of fiddling with the car, what if they've got the virus? It's a really interesting sort of development you put together in terms of what is basically PCF, physical contact-free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the way we saw it, right? So COVID-19, super, super contagious. So we have to be careful that we actually help people, right? So if they work from home, more and more people are working from home, what we do is we have launched this physical contact-free service where our drivers clean the keys, they don't touch the our customers, and on top of that, they are required to make sure that the car is sanitized. They use gloves. They clean the steering wheel, the gear levels, the knobs, the exterior handles to make sure that there's no risk of contaminating anyone.
Now,
physical contact-free.
Yeah. Now, you launched in Manchester in 2017, so literally 3 years. Tremendous growth from that point of view. The physical contact-free service currently just available to folk in London, or do you intend to roll it out across the country?
We rolled it out in all the major cities, right? So London, Manchester, Birmingham, and we're trying to expand it as fast as we can in other cities.
And just allowing for, again, the concerns that people actually have, are there anything else or any other aspects that Fixter actually are implementing to actually sort of help customers who are possibly self-isolating? And let's face it, from that point of view, yes, if you are living alone, if you're somewhat experientially enhanced and so on, you're a little bit elderly in that area, your car is also a place where you might be isolated from that point of view. What are the kind of areas you're providing for, again, the broader scale?
So I think what we want is really everybody to be safe, right? Provide as much services as possible to as many people as possible where we can help. We have the ability to maintain cars. We want to help the elderly. And we're thinking of what we can do for all the people that are key workers, right? I'm sure the government is going to announce something for them today. So we're looking at what we can offer for them probably over the weekend or on Monday.
Sure. Fixter.co.uk, presumably the best place to go to find out further details about what we've spoken about today.
It is, yes, Fixter.co.uk.
Excellent. And, I mean, obviously one doesn't really know. I mean, it's literally finger in the air, area zone in terms of how long this challenge is going to be with us. But presumably, again, there are opportunities that you can roll this out. And I mentioned, of course, as the sort of drive to move from traditional cars to electric vehicles and so on, presumably Fixter will be ahead of the curve in that sort of area and be offering the same service no matter what the power of propulsion for your vehicle.
Yeah, we're trying to, and we're working with our independent garages to move into that direction as well.
Excellent. Limerick, it's been wonderful sharing some thoughts with your good self. Is there a slight French background in yourself? I'm just sort of wondering.
Yes, I'm French Cambodian.
I just sensed there was a connection for that sort of thing there, which is all great for that. I mean, is it something which internationally that we can actually see it sort of developing as well, so that just as you can sort of rent cars and various. I mean, if we ever do get, of course, the days where we can go back to international travel and connect on that basis, is this something which, again, you could see actually rolling out in other countries as well?
Yes, we're looking at what we can do in France. To extend the service.
Excellent. This is good stuff. Well, we wish you all the very best. This is fantastic material that you're actually doing. Again, a reminder, it's fixter.co.uk in terms of details from that point of view. Or shall we give the telephone number out as well, just in case people are sort of thinking, well, that's all well and good, but I don't actually have access to online sort of material. Can they reach you via telephone as well?
Yes, I'll give you a number in a minute. Sorry, I haven't.
That's okay. I think we've got
0330.
Exactly. 808.
08-9527.
Exactly. There we are. And if you want to play that back, just play the podcast back again. Once again, many thanks indeed. Chief Executive Officer and Founder of Fixter, Lynn Varakche. Many thanks.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Bye.
Now, recently on the Midweek Drive, of course, we were talking about the excitement that was being anticipated by the new novel Reborn, the series Reborn that we've talked about before, and the whole intricate mythologies that come through in terms of the world of Lexil and so on, and how she actually copes with understanding and discovering who she is and who she will become. Now, with this unique and complex mythology, clearly it actually needs one of the finest creators to actually join us on the programme. She's been with us before, of course. It's the awesomely talented Jenna Green. How are you, Jenna?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful. Now, just to sort of set the scene, Jenna, we're reaching, I think, on the east coast of America. Is that right?
I'm in Canada.
Oh, you're good. Can you see this? I don't know. These days, with respect to viruses, etc., I just get confused left, right, and centre. Anyway, so you're in the sensible part of North America. Let's hold it at that, eh? Shall we? We'll work on that basis. talk to us, Jenna, about obviously Lethbridge, Alberta, and the whole sort of aspects that you've gone with this. This series has really been praised, and quite rightly, as being a wonderful way of actually using fantasy to start unpicking the experiences of life and so on and so forth. So talk us through your own inspirations behind this and the Reborn series.
Well, the inspirations are a little bit twofold. Obviously, the book has some allegorical elements about slavery, about racism, and things like that. The idea that you're connected to your past or other people who have passed away, while I didn't realize it at the time, it definitely connected to the illness and subsequent passing of my mom. And so there's a lot of emotion in the book that has really come across to the readers, is what I'm told. And just that idea that, you know, the loved ones that are gone, we still have a connection to, and that's quite a beautiful sense and a beautiful message.
Yeah, and Lord knows we're actually in need of that, especially at present time. Now, 5 published novels, including, of course, the Imagine series. Clearly, you have a passion for writing. I love the phrase that you actually provided for the Pandora's Box Gazette, in which you said you didn't know how young you were when you first identified as a writer. But effectively, once you have that bug, in essence, it's like a virus, really, but a good virus. You don't want to kind of get rid of it, do you?
No, it's something you are born with, it's something you're gifted with, and a lot of people have it, it's whether they just choose to pursue it, right? Writing is a lot of work, and so the stories find us, and then we either choose to write them or we don't, and, I mean, it's just always been part of my identity. I mean, as a kid, I wanted to be a writer and a fairy princess, or a writer and a teacher, a writer and a zoologist, a writer and a fairy princess again, but the writer was always there, and that never changed.
Now, one of the things that the late, great Ursula K. Le Guin once said when she was actually asked to produce young adult fantasy was she never saw herself as being a young adult fantasy writer. And then it wasn't until she kind of got around the notion of the Romans built, the whole notion of the journey, the rite of passage, that obviously she developed the Wizard of Earthsea, the Earthsea Quartet, the Tale of Ged, Sparrowhawk, and so on. From your own point of view, in terms of utilising fantasy, as you mentioned, for this coming-of-age fantasy, is this something, Jenna, that you were particularly keen on developing, or was it a case of, darn it, I want to be a thriller writer, I want to be a romantic writer, I want to be a comedic writer, but young fantasy is obviously where you currently sort of express yourself more effectively?
It's what I read, it's what I like. I mean, when I first came up with the idea for the Imagine series, I was 17, so it's not that much of a stretch that it would be a YA book. But yeah, I've tried other genres, and sometimes successfully, sometimes not. I'm a horrible poet. And so you have to find out as a writer where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are, and then the stories just kind of come naturally to you if you don't force it. And I love YA. I read it. I write it. And I'm fine with that. It's great. You can do more in YA and fantasy than in realistic fiction. Not that there's anything wrong with realistic fiction. I love it. But there's just more avenues you can pursue in the realm of YA and fantasy.
We mentioned Le Guin. Clearly, J.K. Rowling springs to mind. You could always go further back to Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, and the elements of fantasy writers that actually come within that. Would you see yourself as being more of a world builder, a character builder? Is it a case of you need both things to actually fit in there? Do you start off with the map? Did you actually say, Lexil is the character, let's talk her through this whole sort of system, and you kind of create that in terms of really setting the scene, setting the parameters for the characters to breathe and exist in?
I think it changes. With the Imagine series, it's very much about the world and the magic systems that came first, then the characters. But with Reborn, the character of Lexil and her journey were very strongly set in place, and then the world kind of came after.
In terms of, obviously, the mythology, as we said, we have in the lead character there somebody who's reeling from the loss of parents, how that sort of works through that process, and that whole understanding and discovering who she is herself from that point of view. I'm intrigued in terms of you've got Lexil saving a young child, forming a new ally with a boy called Finn, and of course fighting to survive. So, you know, if we actually were to go along the line that actually there's no such thing as fiction, and somebody somewhere is actually writing the words I'm speaking now, and the words that we actually write is actually echoed in another dimension, that's pretty tough times you're putting Lexil through, isn't it?
Well, yep.
Well, I mean, just as the creator, clearly, I just hope Lexil forgives you if she ever... I mean, hypothetically, because Dickens used to always say that his characters effectively lived and breathed, they used to talk to and have conversations. Do you find yourself immersing yourself so much in the tale and the narrative that actually you not only get a sense for the rhythm of speech and how they're speaking, but actually sometimes they actually say, "Oi, I wouldn't do that," or "What are you thinking?"
The characters definitely have a mind of their own. I'll plot something out, and then when it comes to writing, they just do something else. And you're like, oh, well, okay, I guess that's where we're going now. It's hard to describe, but yeah, they're out there, they're doing their thing, and I'm just trying my best to write their story.
And in terms of multimedia approaches, multimedia storytelling, etc., would you envisage Lexil, or indeed Reborn, serving as the premise for a whole range of possible online multi-player games, etc.? Would you see that developing? Because these days, sometimes it almost seems generous, though. You need to have more than just the book. You know, you got the book, but then there's all the rest of the paraphernalia that comes along with that as well. So would you consider like the audio version, the movie, etc., etc.?
I think with Reborn, there's definitely some avenues that could be pursued. There's very symbolic, the Willick bracelet. I mean, there's very symbolic things in there. I think in terms of role-player games, the Imagine series would be much better because it's a much broader in terms of character, in terms of setting. So there might be more levels for that. But yeah.
And again, it'd be remiss, and I think it's going to be one of the sort of staple aspects of most of our interviews, actually, over the next few months, shall we say. I mean, with social distancing coming into place. Well, at least we're separated by the Atlantic Ocean, so that's good.
Yeah.
in terms of that whole notion, Jenna, is this proving to be a boon? Is it a case of that's okay, social isolation, social distancing, I can get on with my writing? Does it actually inspire the writer more? Or is it a case of even in my wildest dreams, I wouldn't have actually put Lexil through meeting COVID-19.
I say all the time, I'm like, as a dystopian writer, I feel I should have been better prepared for this.
Yeah.
It's hard because I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And all the schools have been shut down. And we're still expected to go to work every day and sit in our empty classrooms.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. And I have a 3-year-old daughter, and how do I tell her that her birthday party's canceled? So, I mean, I probably will have more opportunities to write. And, you know, I'll be able to get some emotions out, but it's hard to see the flip side right now.
And interesting, I was talking to some of our students, etc., who are receiving their classes via online systems, online delivery and so on. Is that something which, again, I mean, for me, and maybe I'm just an old-fashioned 20th century boy, but somehow I feel that actually it's not quite the same as actually having the interactivity with students in a seminar, as actually sort of waiting for their hands to be virtually raised in a virtual environment and so on. Any thoughts on that? Is it a case of, because clearly there is the sense that this could literally be a sea change, and fundamentally the only way we're going to communicate is as we're doing now, using the medium of radio or audio or packages from that point of view, or in say the virtual worlds?
Well, we'll see what we can do. I work with a population, a rural population, where they don't all have internet.
Yeah.
They don't all speak English. They're immigrants. And so we've definitely got a few more barriers than some other schools and other populations. My kids are 6 and 7 years old, so even sending some home, they may or may not be able to read the instructions. Their parents may or may not be able to.
Yeah.
So it's going to be complicated.
Well, you can at least wish your daughter a virtual happy birthday from the full Midweek Drive team, because we'll pass that on from that point of view. So that's good. And have a virtual world. And I can technically you can actually say the thought is the most important thing. So here's your virtual present. So it could be quite economic. No, perhaps not. That's not the best, the best way forward. Jenna, how can people actually get in touch with you online? What's the best way forward in terms of if people have been stimulated by what we talked about in terms of obviously Series Reborn, or indeed the Imagine series as well?
So you can find me on denagreen.ca, green with an E on the end, Amazon, all the regular channels, Instagram, Twitter. Just make sure it's Jenna Green with the E on the end, and I'm very easy to find.
Fantastic. Again, something else we'd like to sort of invite all our contributors to do. Any kind of thoughts that you'd like to share with the globe now in terms of how we're going to get through this health-based pandemic challenge that's actually there? You know, Lexil will actually beat it, and how will we approach it?
I just keep repeating the phrase, life's tough, but so are you, and we can do this.
Fantastic. Jenna Green, a genuine delight. Oh, two final questions. What am I thinking about? Normally I pass this over to one of our co-hosts, who is obviously not in the studio with me today, but have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive? Has it been okay for you?
It's been great. Thank you.
So can we look forward to featuring you again in the very near future? And I'm sure we'll get our times. I think you probably got two or three messages from me, which I might have left at about, I don't know, 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. your time, because for some bizarre reason. You've gone forward. You've gone into springtime. We haven't gone into springtime. It's all very confusing, as I said. But we got there in the end, Jenna.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
The important thing. We got there in the end.
We got it.
Take care now.
All right. Bye.
Send back the world. There's too much night for me. The sky is much too high to shelter me when darkness falls. For cabin walls would be just right for me. I need a threshold I can cross, where I can sit and gather moss forevermore. Miles away, behind the door. Roll up the planes. There's too much view for me. There's so much space between the waiting heart and whispered word. It's never heard. One room will do for me, where every evening I can stare at someone smiling from his chair across the floor. A million miles away, behind. Thank you. his chair across the floor. Just doing with my life what life is for.
Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
That's Lily Holloman affecting an accent.